Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this now March the 2nd on the West Coast, and on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it is March 3rd, 2011. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. And hopefully you're going to enjoy tonight's show. I mentioned at the end of last night's show that I had a surprise guest. Actually, I have two, and they are going to be speaking in recorded format. So I can't really ask them any questions, but what they have to say is rather profound. And in looking at what's going on in the world and trying to doing my part in providing some solutions and clarifying the issues at hand, because they're not what we're told they are. There's a lot of strife, a lot of chaos being fomented around the world. And what's probably most harmful to the average individual is his or her lack of knowledge and the conflict that that brings about in human relationships. This is by design that we have conflict in our relationships with people around the world. We have them in our families. We have them in our friendships. We have them in our professional associations. Certainly, all of this is orchestrated with great thought and great planning. When I say great, I don't necessarily mean the quality so much as the quantity. A lot of thought is devoted to how to steer human consciousness in directions which are actually to our detriment. And those that claim to have our best interests at heart merely lie about that, and we can base that assertion on their actions. The massive theft of trillions of dollars that we talk about almost on a nightly basis on this show, at least it gets mentioned regardless of the topic. Because whether you're talking about oil companies, pharmaceutical companies, education, pensions, taxes, the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury, Goldman Sachs, what's going on in Wall Street, what's going on with the insurance companies, real estate, the theft of millions of homes, the international fraud that's going on, because those that commit these criminal acts have cohorts in the international banking community. These are historical connections, and We've been through this so many times that it really doesn't even warrant discussing it too much, other than to separate ourselves from all of this insanity and take a closer look at being the observers of what we're going to experience in the rest of our lives. I've mentioned creativity. Of course, there's a process of creativity, and I'm going to use tonight's guests as the means through which to deliver the message. And as you listen to tonight's show, compare what these gentlemen are saying to what I and my guests say night after night on this show, Monday through Fridays, for going on 4 years now. We have been reiterating the same things over and over. And I'm witnessing that there are a lot of people who are waking up who have no idea about the games that have been played. They're learning about some of the serious things that are going on, but they haven't done their homework. They haven't done the research. They haven't even listened to the viewpoints and the wisdom gathered by many, many researchers over a period of 50 or 60 years. And we're going to be listening in a few moments to someone who has devoted his life to solving these sorts of problems. Before we go to that, though, contemplate on what's unfolding, and this is in the context of Toto. Contemplate what it would be like to go through this 1,000 years. And the discourse we're about to listen to was recorded in February of 1974. That's quite a long time ago. And yet the message still applies. And this comes courtesy of the J. Krishnamurti Foundation. And it's an interview of Jiddu Krishnamurti with Dr. Alan Anderson. And I'd like to share that with you now.
Krishnamurti.
Hold on, here it comes.
Australia and other parts of the world. From the outset of his life's work, he repudiated all connections with organized religions and ideologies and said that his only concern was to set men absolutely, unconditionally free. He is the author of many books, among them The Awakening of Intelligence, The Urgency of Change, Freedom from the Known, and The Flight of the Eagle. This is one of a series of dialogues between Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson, who is professor of religious studies at San Diego State University, where he teaches Indian and Chinese scriptures and the oracular tradition. Dr. Anderson, a published poet, received his degree from Columbia University and the Union Theological Seminary. He has been honored with a Distinguished Teaching Award from the California State Universities.
Mr. Krishnamurti, in our previous conversation, I was extremely delighted, for myself at least, that we had made the distinction in terms of the relation between knowledge and self-transformation, between, on the one hand, the relationship that I sustain to the world, as the world is me, and I am the world. And on the other hand, this dysfunctional condition, which indicates in your phrase, that a person is involved in thinking that the description is the described. It would appear then that something must be done to bring about a change in the individual. And going back to our use of the word individual, we could say, and you used the word earlier, that we are dealing with an observer. So if the individual is not to make the mistake of taking the description for the described, then he must, as an observer, relate to the observed in a particular way that is totally different from the way he has been in his confusion. I thought perhaps in this particular conversation, if we pursued that, it would be a link directly with what we had said prior.
What we said previously, wasn't it that there must be a quality of freedom from the known? Otherwise, it would be mere. The known is merely the repetitive of the past, the tradition, the image, and so on. The past, surely, sir, is the observer. Mm-hmm. Past is the accumulated knowledge as the me and the we, they and us. Is this the observer is put together by thought as the past. Thought is the past. Uh-huh. Thought is never free. Thought is never new. Because thought is the response of the past as knowledge, as experience, as memory.
Uh-huh. Yes, I follow that.
And the observer, when he observes, is observing with the memories, experiences, knowledge, hurts, despairs, hope, all that, with all that background, he looks at the observed. So the observer then becomes separate from the observed. Mm-hmm. Is the observer different from the observed, which we'll go into present later
yes,
on?
Yes, right.
That leads to all kinds of other things. So, when we're talking of freedom from the known, we are talking about the freedom from the observer.
The observer, yes.
And the observer is the tradition, the past, the conditioned mind that looks at things, looks at itself, looks at the world, looks at me, and so on. So the observer is always dividing. The observer is the past, and therefore we cannot observe wholly.
Mm-hmm. If a person uses the first-person pronoun, I, while he's taking the description for the described, this is the observer refers to when he says, I. Yes, yes, yes.
I is the past.
I see.
I is the whole structure of what has been. The remembrances, the memories, the hurts, the various demands, all that is put together in the world, the I, who is the observer. And therefore, division. The observer and the observed. The observer who thinks he's a Christian and observes a non-Christian or a communist, is this division, this attitude of mind which observes with a conditioned responses, with memories, and so on. So that is the no.
I see.
I mean, I think that is logically so.
Oh, no, it follows precisely from what you said.
Yes. So, we are asking, can the mind, or the whole structure, can the mind be free from the no? Otherwise, the repetitious action, repetitious attitudes, repetitious ideologies will go on, modified, changed, but it is in the same direction.
Go ahead. I was just going to say something, but I think I'll let it wait until you finish what you said.
So, what is this freedom from the no? I think that's very important to understand, because any creative action, I'm using the word creative in its original sense, not in the sense creative writing, creative bakery, creative essay, creative pictures. I'm not talking in those sense. In the deeper sense of that word, creation means something totally new being born. I mean, it's not creative, it's merely repetitive, modified, changed, not the past. So, unless there is a freedom from the known, there is no creative action at all, which is, freedom implies not the negation of the known, but the understanding of the known, and that understanding brings about an intelligence which is the very essence of freedom.
Right. I'd like to make sure that I've understood your use of this word creative.
Yeah, that's why.
Seems to me very, very important.
Yes.
People who use the word creative in the sense that you described, creative this, that, and the
that's
other.
That's a horror. That is a dreadful way of using that word.
Because what the issue is of their activity
is something merely novel.
Novel. That's right.
Not radically new,
no.
but novel.
It's like creative writing, teaching creative writing. It's so absurd.
Exactly. Yes. Now I do, I think, grasp precisely the distinction that you've made. And I fully agree with that.
Unless you feel new, you can't create anything new.
That's right. And the person who imagines that he is creative in this other sense that we pointed to is a person whose reference for his activity is this observer we mentioned that is tied to the past.
Yes, that's right.
So even if something does appear that is really extraordinarily novel, merely novel, it's but still extraordinary novel, they're kidding themselves.
The novel is not the creative.
Exactly.
The novel is just the novel.
Right. And today, especially, it seems to me in our culture, we've become hysterical about this because in order to be creative, one simply must rack his brains in order to produce something which in itself is bizarre enough to get attention.
That's all. Attention, success.
Mm? Yes. It has to be novel to the degree that I feel knocked on the head by it.
Yeah, eccentric and all the rest.
Exactly. But if that tension is increased, then with each succeeding generation, the person is put to tremendous stress not to repeat the past, which he can't help repeating.
Repeating quite. That's why I say
exactly.
Freedom is one thing and create and knowledge is another. We must relate the two and see whether the mind can be free from knowledge. We won't go into it now. This is real meditation for me. You follow, sir?
Yes, I do.
Because when we talk about meditation, we'll go into it. But see whether the brain can record and be free not to record. Brain to record and operate when necessary in the recording, in memory, in knowledge, and be free to observe without the observer.
Yes, I see. That distinction seems to me absolutely necessary. Otherwise, it wouldn't be intelligible.
No.
No, yes.
So, knowledge means is necessary to act in the sense my going home from here to the place I live. I must have knowledge. I must have knowledge to speak English. I must have knowledge to write a letter and so on. Everything. The knowledge as function is mechanical function is necessary. Now if I use that knowledge in my relationship with you, another human being, I am bringing about a barrier, a division between you and me, who is the observer. If I'm making myself clear.
That and I'm the observed in that case.
Yeah.
Right, in that context.
That is, knowledge in relationship, in human relationship, is destructive.
Mm-hmm.
That is knowledge, which is the tradition, the memory, the image, which the mind has built about you. When we are related together, that knowledge is separated, and therefore creates conflict in that relationship. Mm-hmm. As we said earlier, where there is division, there must be conflict. Division between India and Pakistan, India and America, Russia and all that. This divisive activity, politically, religiously, economically, socially, in every way, must inevitably bring conflict and therefore violence. That's obvious.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, when in relationship, in human relationship, knowledge comes between, then in that relationship there must be conflict. Between a wife, husband and wife, boy and girl, wherever there is the operation of as the observer, who is the past, who is knowledge, in that activity there is division and therefore conflict in relationship.
So now the question that comes up next is the one of freedom from being subject to this repetitive round.
That's right.
Good, good.
Now, is that possible? You follow, sir? It's an immense question because human beings live in relationship.
Yes.
There is no life without relationship. Life means to be related.
Exactly.
People who retire into a monastery and all that, they are still related. However much they might like to think they are alone, they are actually related.
Yes.
Related to the past.
Oh, yes, very much so. Mm-hmm.
To their Savior, to their Christ, to their Buddha, to their... follow all that. They're related to the past.
And their rule.
And their rules.
Yes.
They live in the past. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they are the most destructive people. Because they're not creative in the deeper sense of that word.
No, and they also, insofar as they are involved in this confusion that you've been talking about,
are
not even producing anything novel.
No,
means anything, but perhaps that would rather radically...
The novel would be for a man who is talkative to enter a monastery where they don't talk.
Yes.
That's a novel to him, and he said that's a miracle.
Right.
So, our problem then is, what place has knowledge in human relationship?
Yes. That's the problem.
That's one problem.
Yes.
Because relationship with human beings is the highest importance, obviously. Because out of that relationship we create the society in which we live. Mm-hmm. Out of that relationship all our existence comes.
This would take us back again to the earlier statement, I am the world and the world is me.
Yes.
That is a statement about relationship.
Yes.
It's a statement about many other things too.
Of course.
But that is a statement about relationship.
Yes.
The statement, the description is not the described, is the statement of the rupture of the relationship.
Yes, that's right.
In terms of everyday activity.
Everyday activity is my life, is the life, is our
everything.
Life.
Yes, precisely.
Whether I go to the office, factory, or drive a bus, or whatever it is, it is life, living.
But it is interesting, isn't it, that even when that rupture is undergone at a very destructive level, what we've called thought in the context of our description of it and image becomes itself even distorted.
Of course, of course.
So that the distortion that we've been calling knowledge in terms of its application, not what you described as I need to know how to get from here to there.
Yeah.
No, of course. Can itself suffer an even worse condition than we are presently related to? And we have tomes upon tomes about that pathology in itself, don't we?
Correct.
Yes. Please do go on.
So knowledge and freedom. They must both exist together. Not freedom and knowledge. It's the harmony between the two. The two operating all the time in relationship.
Mm-hmm. The knowledge and
freedom.
The freedom in harmony.
In harmony. It's like they can never be divorced. if I want to live with you in great harmony, which is love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which when we'll discuss that later on. There must be this absolute sense of freedom from you.
Mm-hmm.
Not dependency and so on, so on, so on. This absolute sense of freedom and operating at the same time in the field of knowledge.
Exactly. So somehow knowledge, if I may use a theological word here without prejudicing what we're talking about, if in correct relationship with this freedom, is somehow continuously redeemed. It is somehow operating no longer destructively, but in coordination with the freedom in which I may live. Because we haven't got to that freedom yet.
No,
we've just posited the freedom.
That's why we,
exactly.
we have somewhat analyzed or discussed or opened the question of knowledge.
Yes.
And we haven't gone into the question of freedom, what it means.
Mm-hmm. No, but we have established something, I think, that this conversation so far has revealed, which is terribly important. At least, I'd say, for my students, in terms of helping them not to misunderstand what you're saying.
Quite.
I have the feeling that that many persons, because they're not sufficiently attentive to what you say, simply dismiss many statements you say out of hand as
impossible.
As either impossible or if they like the aesthetics of it.
Yeah,
it still doesn't apply to them.
It's
a lovely thing out there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if somehow we could do this?
But
you see, you haven't said that. You haven't said what they think you've said. You've said something about knowledge with respect to pathology, and you've said something about knowledge in which knowledge itself is no longer destructive.
No.
So we're not saying that knowledge as such is the bad guy, and something else is the good guy.
No.
I think it's terribly important that that's seen.
Yes, sir.
And
that's what
I wouldn't mind it being repeated over and over again.
No, quite.
Because I do heartily feel that it's easy to misunderstand.
That's very important, because religion, at least the meaning of that word, is to gather together to be attentive. That is the true meaning of that word, religion. I've looked it up.
Oh, yes, I agree.
Gathering together all energy to be attentive. Yeah,
yes.
To be attentive. Otherwise, it's not religion. Religion is all the thing. So, and we'll discuss that when we come to it. So, freedom means this sense of complete austerity and sense of total negation of the observer.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Out of that comes austerity, everything else. We'll go into that later on.
But austerity in itself doesn't produce it.
And now.
So we turn that upside down. Right.
Yes. Austere means, really, the word itself means ash.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dry, brittle. But the austerity of which we're talking about is something entirely different. It is,
yes,
it is the freedom that brings about this austerity inwardly.
There's a beautiful biblical phrase that points to this. Just three words. Beauty for ashes. When a transformation takes place. And in English we have the phrase ashes in the mouth.
When
the whole thing has come to the
ashes in the mouth.
But there's the change from ashes to beauty.
Now, so, freedom in action in the field of knowledge. And in the field of human relationship. Because That is the highest importance, human relationship.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes, particularly if I am the world and the world is me.
I mean, obviously.
Yes.
So, what place has knowledge in human relationship? Knowledge in the sense, past experience, tradition, image.
Yes.
What has the observer, who is the observer, all that is the observer, what place has the observer in human relationship?
Mm-hmm. What place has knowledge, on the one hand, what place has the observer?
Observer is the knowledge.
Is the knowledge. But there's the possibility of seeing knowledge, not simply negatively, but in coordination, in true creative relationship.
I've said that.
Exactly.
That is, I am related to you. Let's, to make it very simple. I'm related to you. You're my brother or whatever it is, husband, wife, whatever it is. And what place has knowledge as the observer, which is the past, and knowledge is the past, what place has that in our relationship?
If our relationship is creative, in the sense...
It is not. No, not if. We must take it actually as it is. I am related to you. I am married to you. I am your wife or husband, whatever it is. Now, what is the actuality in that relationship? The actuality, not theoretical actuality, but the actuality is that I am separate from you.
The actuality must be that we are not divided.
But we are. I may call you my husband, my wife, but I am concerned with my success. I'm concerned with my money. I'm concerned with my ambitions, my envy. I'm full of me.
Yes, I see that, but I want to make sure now that we haven't reached a confusion here.
We have.
When I say that the actuality is that we are not separate, I don't mean to say that at the phenomenal level that a dysfunction is occurring. I'm fully aware of that. But if we're going to say that the world is me and I am the world...
We say it theoretically. We don't feel it.
Precisely. But if that is the case, that the world is me and I am the world,
This is actual only when I have no division in myself.
Exactly.
But I have a division.
If I have a division,
and therefore it's
then
just,
there's no relationship between one and the other.
Therefore, I accept, one accepts the idea that the world is me and the world, me is the world. That's just an idea. Look, sir.
Yes, I understand. But if and when it happens.
No, wait. Just see what takes place in my mind. I make a statement of that kind. The world is you and you are the world. Mm-hmm. The mind then translates it into an idea, into a concept, and tries to live according to that concept.
Exactly.
It has abstracted from reality.
Mm-hmm. This is knowledge in the destructive sense.
I won't call it destructive or positive. This is what's going on.
Well, let's say the issue from it is hell.
Yes. So, in my relationship with you, what place has knowledge, the past, the image, which is the observer, all that is the observer? What place has the observer in our relationship? Actually, the observer is the factor of division.
Right.
And therefore, conflict between you and me. This is what's going on in the world every day.
then one would have to say, it seems to me, following the conversation, point by point, that the place of this observer, understood as you've pointed it out, is the point of this relationship.
Is the point where there is really actually no relationship at all. I may sleep with my wife or you may sleep and so on and so on, but actually there is no relationship. Because I have my own pursuits, my own ambitions, my own, all the idiosyncrasies and so on, and she has hers. So we are always separate. And therefore always in battle with each other. Which means the observer as the past is the factor of division.
Yes. I was just wanting to be sure that the phrase, is the place, what is the place of the observer, was understood in the context of what we're saying. We have made the statement that there is such a thing.
Yes.
Well, its place as such would seem to me not to be what we usually mean by its occupying a place.
Yes.
We're talking rather about an activity here that is profoundly disordered.
As long as there is the observer,
yes,
there must be conflict in relationship.
Yes, I follow that.
Wait.
Yes.
No, see what happens. I make a statement of that kind. Someone will translate into an idea, into a concept, and say, how am I to live that concept? The fact is, he doesn't observe himself as the observer.
That's right. He is the observer looking out there, making a distinction between himself
and the statement.
Making a division.
Division. Now, so, has the observer any place at all in relationship? I say no. The moment he comes into existence, in relationship, there is no relationship.
The relationship is not.
Is not. That's
it's
right.
Not something that is in this relationship.
Yes, that's right.
We're talking about something that in fact does not even exist.
Therefore, we have to go into the question, why human beings in their relationship with other human beings are so violent.
Now we're going to pause there for a moment. I'm going to allow you to expand a little bit. This is very expanding material. And you've got to really pay attention to the meaning of what is being said here to understand that you're not being attacked or you're not being put down. You're simply hearing the views of someone who has spent his whole life really addressing these issues in order to bring the message to us. We'll be listening to more of the interview with Dr. Alan Anderson and Jay Krishnamurti in a moment. Have a listen to the message that he just gave in song.
Show me the meaning of being lonely. So many words for the broken heart. It's hard to see in a crimson love, so hard to breathe. Walk with me and maybe night to light so soon become wild and free. I can feel the sun. Your every wish will be done. They tell me.
Lonely. Is this the feeling I need to walk? one. I have no place to go. Surrender my heart, body and soul.
How can it be you're asking me to feel the things you never show?
Of the Backstreet Boys, show me the meaning of being lonely. They're actually describing the very dilemma that Krishnamurti was talking about. Not so much in a personal sense, he's talking about the all, and he's leading to the aspect of true creativity. Where does it come from? It doesn't come from the I, from the past, but it's something new. This is the basis of much of what I've been sharing when I say the things that are happening in the world that are causing chaos and destruction and illness and death and confusion and mistrust, not just of governments, but people that act as agents for governments. This is in the context of how we all fit into the creation, which is an ever ongoing process. The creation of things which are new, not things built upon the past. That's where the Illuminati have created their power structures, and their all in the past, so they don't really exist in the present. Consider that as we listen to the second half of this interview.
Because that's spreading throughout the world. I was told the other day in India, a mother came to see me, very Brahmanical family and very cultured and all the rest of it. Her son, who is six, when she asked him to do something, he took up a stick and began to hit her. A thing unknown. You follow, sir?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea that you should hit your mother is traditionally something incredible. And this boy did it. And I said, see what is the fact. We went into it, she understood, so on. So, to understand violence, one has to understand division.
The division was already there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would not have picked up the stick.
Division between nations, you follow, sir?
Mm-hmm.
This race for armaments is one of the factors of violence, which is I'm calling myself American, and others calling himself Russian or Hindu or whatever it is. This division is the factor of real violence and hatred. Mm-hmm. If a mind, when a mind sees that, he cuts away all division in himself. He's no longer a Hindu, American, Russian. He's a human being. With his problems, which is then he's trying to solve, not in terms of India or in America or Russia. So that's... So we come to the point, can the mind be free in the relationship, which means orderly,
yes.
Not chaotic.
No, no.
Orderly.
It has to be, otherwise okay, it couldn't use the word relation.
No, no.
Yes.
So can the mind be free of that? Free of the observer. So,
if not, there's no hope.
That's the whole point.
If not, we've had it.
Yeah. And all the escapes and going off into other religions, doing all kinds of tricks, and no meaning. Now, this demands a great deal of perception, insight.
Yes.
Into the fact of your life. How one lives one's life. After all, philosophy means the love of truth, love of wisdom, not the love of some abstraction.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Wisdom is supremely practical.
Practical. Therefore, here it is. That is, can a human being live in relationship, in freedom, and yet operate in the field of knowledge.
And yet operate in the field of knowledge. Yes.
And be absolutely orderly. Otherwise it's not freedom. Because order means virtue.
Yes. Yes.
Which doesn't exist in the world at the present time. There is no sense of virtue in anything. They will repeat. Virtue is a creative thing. It's a living thing. It's a moving thing.
I'm thinking, as you're saying this, about virtue, which is really power, which is really the ability to act. And if I'm following you correctly, what you're really saying, and please correct me if I'm way off here. What you're really saying is that the ability to act in the strict sense, which must be creative, otherwise it's not an action,
no,
but it is simply a reaction.
Yeah, a repetition.
A repetition. That the ability to act or virtue, as you put it, bears with it necessarily the implication of order. It must. There seems to me no way out of that.
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to recover
yes,
that
quite,
step
quite.
Step at a time.
So can I come back? In human relationship as it exists now, we are looking at that, what actually is. In that human relationship, there is conflict. Sexual violence and so on, so on, so on. Every kind of violence. Now, can man live at total at peace? Otherwise, it's not creative. In human relationship. Because that is the basis of all life. You know?
I'm very taken with the way you have pursued this. I notice that when we ask this question, is it possible that? The reference for it is always a totality.
Yes.
And the reference over here is a fragment or a fragmentation or a division. Never once have you said that the passage from one to the other is a movement that even exists.
No, it can't exist.
See?
Quite. Absolutely.
I think, Mr. Krishnamurti, that nothing is so difficult to grasp as this
from
statement
this to
that you've made. Yes. There is nothing that we are taught from childhood
I know.
To render such a possibility a matter for taking seriously, because one doesn't like to make sweeping statements about the way everybody's been educated, but I'm thinking of myself from a child upward, all the way through graduate school, accumulating a lot of this knowledge that you've been talking about. I don't remember anybody saying to me, or even pointing me to a literature that so categorically makes this distinction between one and the other, as in terms of each other, not accessible to each other through passage.
No. Quite.
Now, I'm correct in understanding
quite right,
aren't I?
Quite right.
Maybe I could just say this as an aside.
The fragment can't become the whole.
No, the fragment cannot become the whole in and of itself.
But the fragment is always trying to become the whole.
Exactly. Now, of course, in the years of very serious and devoted contemplation and exploration of this, which quite clearly you have undertaken with great passion, I suppose it must have occurred to you that the first sight of this, while one is in a condition of the observer, must be very frightening. In the condition of the observer, thought that there is no passage.
No, but you see, I never looked at it that way. If you will,
but please tell me how you looked at it. Listen, please.
From childhood, I never thought I was a Hindu.
I see.
I never thought, when I was educated in England and all the rest of it, that I was European. I never was caught in that trap. I don't know how it happened. I was never caught in the trap.
Well, when you were quite little then,
yes,
and your playmate said to you, well, now look, you're a Hindu. What did you say?
I probably put on Hinduism, you know, all the trappings of Brahman tradition.
Yes,
I was, but it never penetrated deeply.
As we say in the vernacular, it never got to you.
It never got to me, that's right.
I see. That's very remarkable. That is extraordinary. The vast number of people in the world seem to have been got to with respect to this.
That's why I think, you see, propaganda has become the means of change.
Yes.
Propaganda is not truth. Repetition is not truth.
It's a form of violence. Yes.
So, a mind that says, that merely observes, doesn't react to what it observes, according to its conditioning, which means there is no observer at any time. Therefore, no division. It happened to me. I don't know how it happened, but it's happened. And in observing all this, I see in every human relationship, every kind of human relationship, there is this division, and therefore violence. And to me, the very essence of non-relationship is the factor of me and you.
I was just trying to go back in my own personal history and think of when I was a child. I did, while accepting that I was different, I did believe that. I did come to accept that. There was something else, however, that always held me very, very hard to center in terms of making an ultimate issue of that. And that was an experience I had when I was rowing a boat. I spent some time in Scandinavia as a child, and I used to take the boat out on the fjord every day. And when I would row, I was profoundly moved by the action of the water when I moved the oar. Because I lifted the oar out of the water, and there was a separation in substance between the water and the oar. But the water, which was necessary for support and for purchase so that I could propel myself, never lost touch with itself. It always turned into itself without ever having left itself in the beginning. And once in a while I would laugh at myself and say, if anyone catches you looking at this water any longer than you're doing, they'll think that you're clear out of your mind. So this is the observer talking to himself, of course. But that made such a profound impression on me that I think it was what you might call a little salvation for me. Cool. And I never lost that. So maybe there's some relationship between that apprehension, which I think changed my being, and what it is that you're talking about as one who never, ever suffered this sense of separation at all. Yeah. Yes, please go ahead.
So that brings us to the point, sir, doesn't it? Can the human mind, which has evolved in separation,
yes,
in fragmentations,
this is where evolution is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can such a mind transform, undergo a regeneration which is not produced by influence, by propaganda, by threat and punishment? Because if it changes because it's going to get a reward,
then it hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed.
No.
So that is one of the fundamental things which one has to ask and answer it in action, not in words.
In
action.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Which is, my mind, the human mind, has evolved in contradiction, in duality. The me and the not me. Has evolved in this traditional cleavage, division, fragmentation. Now, can that mind observe this fact, observe without the observer, and only then there is a regeneration? As long as there is an observer observing this, then there is a conflict. I don't know if I make it
clear. Yes, you do. You make yourself very clear on two levels. On the level of discourse alone, which I know is not your major concern, on the level of discourse alone, it necessarily follows that it must be the case that this possibility exists. Otherwise, we would be talking nonsense. But then the agony of the situation at large that we have been describing is simply that whether this can be done or no never occurs to a person, and in the absence of it even occurring, the repetition is going to continue indefinitely, and things are going to get worse and worse.
So the difficulty is most people won't even listen.
I'm sighing. I know that.
Won't listen. If they do listen, they listen with their conclusions. If I'm a communist, I will listen to you up to a point. After that, I won't listen to you. And if I am slightly demented, I will listen to you and translate what I hear according to my
dementia. Exactly.
So, one has to be extraordinarily serious to listen. Serious in the sense, put aside my peculiar prejudices and idiosyncrasies and listen to what you're saying. Because the listening is the miracle. Not what shall I do with what you have said.
Not what shall I listen to.
But the act of listening.
But the act of listening itself. So we're back to ing. Where the listening itself.
That requires, I mean, you're good enough to listen to me. Because you want to find out. But vast majority, what are you talking about? I want to go and enjoy myself. So go and talk to somebody else. So, to create an atmosphere, to create an ambiance, a feeling, look, the life is dreadfully serious, my friend. Do listen. It's your life. Don't waste it. Do listen. To bring about a human being that will listen is the greatest importance. Because we don't want to listen. It's too disturbing.
I understand. I have tried sometimes in class to make this very point. And sometimes I suggest that we should watch the animal. especially the wild animal.
Of course.
Because if it's not listening, it's likely dead.
Dead, yes, sir.
There is this extraordinary
attention
that it makes. And every instant of its life is a crisis.
Absolutely. You see, but...
And you know what happens? The eyes out there show, in the main, that they're thinking I'm talking about animal psychology.
Correct.
I'm not talking about psychology at all.
I know.
I'm talking about what is the case, which is either or, and there isn't any way to get from either to or. That's what I mean.
Correct.
So I think I understand you.
See, so in America, what is happening is now, as I observe it, and I may be mistaken, they're not serious. They're playing with new things. Something
sipping daiquiri on island.
I'm understanding that I'm back on the air, so I apologize. Totally got powered out. Everything went off. It's amazing how much truth was coming out there. I'm going to try to cue up the balance of what we were listening to, provided that everything goes smoothly at this point. And I'm trying to get the, okay, here we go. I think I have it. Don says, we're back on the air. So I'm trusting that I'm not talking to myself and my listening audience is actually hearing what I have to say or what Krishnamurti had to say. I'm going to try to find the exact spot. So I apologize if something gets repeated here. Not intentional. Of course, it wouldn't hurt us to hear the message again.
A rather pious remark about the relation between their going to school and the values of civilization. And we have this whole, and that turns out to be learning a series of ideas. Well, I don't know whether they do it anymore, but they used to put the word character in there. They probably decided that's unpopular. They might very well have dropped that out by now. I'm not sure. Yes, yes. Yes, I'm following what you say.
So when you feel responsible, there is a flowering of real affection. A flowering of care for a child. And you don't train him or cultivate, condition him to go and kill another for the sake of your country. You follow? Mm-hmm. All that is involved in it. So, we come to a point where a human being, as he is now, so conditioned to be irresponsible, what are the serious people going to do with the irresponsible people? You understand? Mm-hmm. Education, politics, religion, everything is making human beings irresponsible. I'm not exaggerating, this is so.
Oh no, you're not exaggerating, yes.
I see this as a human being. I say, what am I to do? You follow, sir? Mm-hmm. What is my responsibility in face of the irresponsible?
Well, if it's to start anywhere, say in English, it must start at home. It would have to start with me.
So I say, that's the whole point. I have to start with me.
Right.
Then if from that question arises, then you can't do anything about the irresponsible.
No, exactly.
No, sir. Something strange takes place.
Oh, I misunderstood you. I'm sorry. What I meant by replying there is that I don't attack the irresponsible.
No.
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Something strange takes place, which is consciousness The irresponsible consciousness is one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the consciousness of responsibility is another. Now, when the human being is totally responsible, that responsibility unconsciously enters into the irresponsible mind. I don't know how to make anything. Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, go ahead.
So, no, I'm irresponsible. Suppose I'm irresponsible. You're responsible. You can't do anything consciously with me. Because the more you actively operate on me, I resist.
That's right. That's right. That's what I meant by no attacking.
Attacking. I react violently to you. I build wall against you. I hurt you. I do all kinds of things. But you see that you cannot do anything consciously, actively, let's put it that way.
Designedly.
Designedly. Mm-hmm. Planned, which is what they're all trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can talk to me, to my unconscious, because the unconscious is much more active.
Oh, yes.
Much more alert, much more sees the danger, much quicker than the conscious. So it's much more sensitive. So if you can talk to me, to the unconscious, that operates. So you don't actively, designedly attack the irresponsible. They have done it. And they have made a mess of it.
Oh, yes, it compounds, complicates the thing further.
Whereas if you talk to him, you talk to me, but your whole inward intention is to show how irresponsible I am. What is responsibility mean? You follow?
Yes.
You care. In other words, you care for me.
Yes, yes. I was chuckling because the complete and total opposite crossed my mind. And it just seemed so absolutely absurd. Yes. No, I'm...
You care for me
because I
am irresponsible. You follow?
Exactly.
Therefore you care for me. And therefore you are watching not to hurt me, not to... You follow? In that way you penetrate very, very deeply into my unconscious. And that operates unknowingly when I'm suddenly, I say, by Jehovah, you follow? That operates. I have seen this, sir, in operation, because I've talked for 50 years, unfortunately or fortunately, to large audiences. Tremendous resistance to anything new.
Yes.
Say, if I say, don't read sacred books, which I say all the time, because you are just conforming. Obey. You're not living, you're living according to some book that you have read. Immediately there is resistance. Who are you to tell us?
Not to do something.
Not to do this or to do that. So I say, all right. See, I go on pointing out. I'm not trying to change them. I'm not doing propaganda. Because I don't believe in propaganda. It's a lie. So I say, look what you do when you are irresponsible. You're destroying your children. You send them to war. To be killed and to be maimed and to kill and to maim. Is that act of love? Is that affection? Is that care? Why do you do it? And I go into it. They get bewildered. They don't know what to do. So it begins to slowly seep in.
Well, at first, it's such a shock. It sounds positively subversive to some.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely subversive.
Of course. Yes. But
So we enter into now something, which is my relationship to another, when there is total responsibility, in which freedom and care go together.
Uh-huh.
I do not, the mind has no image in relationship at all.
Uh-huh.
Because the image is the division. Where there is care, there is no image, imagination, no image.
This would lead us into what perhaps later we could pursue, love.
Oh, that's a tremendous thing.
Yes, yes.
We have to go.
Could we lay a little, few words before that? I don't know necessarily that next time we would do that, but it would come naturally.
Yeah.
I've been listening to what you've been saying, it's occurred to me that if one is responsible and care is continuous with that, one would not fear. One could not fear.
Yes, sir.
Could not fear.
No, but you see, that means really one must understand fear.
Hmm? One must understand fear.
And
yes.
Also the pursuit of pleasure. Those two go together. They're not two separate things.
What I've learned here in our discussion is that what it is, if I followed you correctly, that we should turn ourselves toward understanding is not what are called values.
Oh, no.
We don't understand love. We understand all those things which we catch ourselves into
which
that
are not.
Militate against any possibility whatsoever. This is what's so hard to hear, that to be told that there just is no possibility.
Yes, sir.
This produces immense terror. Do you think next time when we converse together, we could begin at that point where we could discuss fear?
Oh, yes.
Good.
But, sir,
good.
Before we enter fear, there is something which we should discuss very carefully. What is order in freedom?
Fine. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Well, that was Jiddu Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson from the University of San Diego interviewing him and discussing the issue of responsibility. We talked about the impact that this has in our being. I have to apologize for the interruption that occurred. It was beyond my control. Those things happen. It's interesting that they choose to happen during showtime. I have a musical message here from Lee Ritenour, a song sung by Phil Perry. And it addresses the issue of the aspect of who we are and where we should be looking for this source of inspiration, where it comes from. He mentioned the subconscious mind, which is active all the time. It's always sorting things out. It's always paying attention to everything that's going on. And it's not making judgments about them. It's sort of like an endless tape that has the ability to keep recording events and experiences. And that plays a process in addressing the space where knowledge is and wisdom and truth. He talked about propaganda. He flat out said it's a lie. which it is. It's intended to create a false reality. And when you step outside of the I, which he refers to as the past, based on past experiences, images that spring out of that, then you wonder why we have a society built on imagery, movies, pictures, idol worship. They go even into statues and other types of symbols that, again, are nothing more than images. Maybe more abstract than the things that you see as you go about your life, but nevertheless, something which has maintained a vice-like grip over consciousness on this planet. And if you think of things in a grander sense, which we always attempt to do on this show, we talk about freedom. Where does freedom come from? What is it if it's not allowing you to create something new? We're not talking about retracing old pathways or your previous steps or the steps of another, but to go further into a creative process. Some would call it dreaming. And this is from Lee Ritenour, Phil Perry singing "If I'm Dreaming."
Cross
I'm dreaming, don't wake me. That seems to be the state that most people are in, unfortunately, on this planet. And it's not intended to make fun or criticize those. It's just an observation. When you step outside, I guess ultimately, if what Krishnamurti and Dr. Anderson have said in this interview is accurate and true, we affect the change that we're trying to make as free sovereign beings of the creation, and complying with all these rules, and based on the past, everything based on the past holds you back. It can only keep you in the past if everything in our existence is based on that. It's pretty simple. It's not that complicated, but we seem to complicate it because we try to fix our world's problems. The governments try to fix them, whether it's financial or the safety of a country or its mere existence if it's threatened by someone else. Why do these things occur? I've said often that they don't need to happen, that we can change things the moment we understand that changing comes from stepping outside of this knowledge and recognizing that all the things that are going on in the world are designed to separate. They don't promote a congening of energy, a congening of spirit, a congening of the mind, the universal mind. We're existing as something outside of everything that's real, being tossed to and fro like people standing on the deck of a ship in the middle of a hurricane, wondering why we don't see the sun, wondering why we feel threatened, wondering what's going to happen to us. And we've become paralyzed. There are those of us who are totally ignorant of what's going on, totally absorbed in this vicious circle of events, based on the past. There's nothing wrong in looking at the past. If you identify what it is, you can change it by making the decision that it's insanity to continue on that way. So I thought tonight, anyway, to give you a little bit of Krishnamurti's views on the matter of human consciousness and our inability to get along with one another, because we don't really see the truth as it is. Without the colored glasses, without the rhetoric, without the propaganda, without the illusions. These things aren't real. And if we're focusing all of our being into what's not real, then are we real at that point? Consider these things for the next 23 hours or so. My guests tomorrow night will be Mr. Ken Adachi and Zernova Star Livingstone, and we're going to be talking about what's really going on in the world. You're going to want to tune in for that show, but it's time for me to say goodnight. I'd like to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. We had Don Newsom on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Again, join me tomorrow night. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.